It was a long ways over there, if any of you have ever been over there. 13 hours nonstop from L.A. to Sydney. A lot of time to sit on a plane and think about it. But we obviously had some help putting this together. I'd like to thank the Trust and the Board for letting us go. Also, Scott Shepherd with Samuel Strapping, U.S. Division, and Nick Thompson with Samuel Strapping, Australian Division. Nick was obviously helping us put people in play, get appointments set so we could enter the gyms, along with Daniel Lewis, who was at Cubby Station at the time. And I've asked Daniel to be here today to talk a little bit about Cubby Station and what his role was there, why he was there. 6 months is a long time to be in Australia, and so he picked up a lot of information that we think is going to be useful to us over here of what they were doing versus what we're doing. Also, Oscott and Airbry was one of the gyms we visited, along with Queensland Weewaw, Northwest Gin, or I say Cubby Station and Brigham Gin. The majority of these are independent gyms. Naomi was the co-op side of it, from what I understand. We did not get to visit any of those plants. All of these plants are in the northern part of Australia. You say, ooh, north was coming off before the south. Yeah, it's just backwards over there. So it was warmer in the north, so that's where they start and everything progressed towards the south. So with that, I'm going to ask Daniel to come up and talk a little bit about Cubby Station first and what his experiences was there.
This being my first panel, I thought we were actually going to sit right there and just talk. So the gin there was something to see, all brand new, Loomis. Well, I think it was built in 97, but it's been renovated the past 6 years, so it's pretty much a new Loomis plant. We handled, I think we were 99%, they said, round. We had 130 conventional modules out of the 8,000 round modules. This is just go through some of the safety we had in the gin. Everything was caged off. Couldn't get to it. This machine was our tilt cradle to pick up the rounds, and it was limit switched and guarded all the way around with chains. There it is again. It's picking it up. Here's a picture. Can't really see him. I'm in the way. This guy right here. We had gin uniform. If you were in the gin, you had to be wearing ginners. Your full-time employees had a blue uniform. Our seasonal guys were all orange. Everyone wore reflective clothing. Mandatory, you cannot work without it. Here's our control room, the gin office inside the gin, all of our panels on it. This guy right here, Toby, who's our safety officer. He was in charge of all the safety for the gin, one of the ginners. Led all of our, we had a meeting, safety meeting every 2 weeks. He led it, made sure everyone was good, safety, first aid. We had a defibrillator in the gin. He gave everyone training for it, plus CPR. Going into our protection, we had a, we'll see it later on, we took the guards off in front of the gins. We had, still had the photo eye to where you couldn't reach in the stands while they're running. They automatically come out. We were modifying our covers that we had over them, their cage, so you can get an air wand and still blow air through there without having to open them up. All of our protection up on top and overhead. We had rails, catwalks all the way around. Every machine was guarded. Here's more. Our distributor conveyor, we had a disconnect on both ends of the conveyor. I thought it was really nice. If you were up there and you wanted to run it, you can shut it off either side of it where you're at. All of our gym machinery had disconnects. We have a picture of it later on. Not sure the order. The press, which this to me, this is really new. I've never seen this in the States, but it was completely enclosed. You could not get near the press while it was running. Fortress system on it. These doors could open, but not until we shut the press down. Again, more of our fans were completely enclosed. Every ladder had a guardrail on it. platforms. If you went up to the top of the gym, top of the trash house. Our moat plant, or moss plant, as they call them there, we essentially, it's another gen. Next year, this is an improvement they're planning on making, is to automate that system to where there will be no one making moats. It's just going to convey them out and set them outside. You want me to keep going? You are. All right. Well, I guess there's a couple things I wanted to cover on this stuff. So, so one thing that we did there for, I'll start this and let Jen finish it. Before the season started, throughout the season, we did random drug testing. We had 8 people in the gym. If someone didn't show up, we had people on call year-round. And if you were called in, no matter what time, what a day it was, or what day, you know, 7 o'clock start a shift, you were still called in, you were given a breathalyzer every day, which I thought was kind of convenient. You knew the people you were working with were safe. We had an induction training before the season started. For 3 days before we started ginning, everyone was trained how to do their job, what to do, where to be, what not to do. Every employee was given a lock for lockout tagout. It had to be on them when they were at the gin. If they didn't have it, they couldn't work. And they were taught how to disconnect the machine, which ones they should disconnect, which ones they shouldn't, and just kind of overall safety in the gin. We had the ginners had to do confined space. We had our safety inspector come in and give us training on how to climb a forklift, how to plug in a grinder. And they did 3 days of safety. To me, a lot of stuff was common sense, but it was covered. When we, halfway through the season, stopped and had a safety meeting on how to disconnect and connect an air wand. Just because someone got hurt, so we covered it. But that's all I want to talk about.
Daniel, I got a question. How much of this is I won't say normal, but is this over and above? Is regulatory? Is this average?
From what I understand from the guys who worked in gyms there, they said that's how it was. They were shocked with the stuff I told them.
Sure.
The gym I worked with, we had a motor go out at midnight. I climbed up there and I opened the box, reset. This motor started, didn't want to come on, okay, so climb up there, start taking the motor, disconnect it, put a new one up there. And he flipped out, tried yelling because when I climbed up on top of the distributor conveyor, this motor went out, started opening the box to disconnect the wires, and he said, you can't do that. That was illegal. One, to climb on top of the conveyor off the catwalk like that, and two, to touch anything electrical. Just opening the box, he threw a fit. Which here, if you know what you're doing, you're comfortable doing it, I've always done it. So,
I guess my question is, is that a standard?
We had Work Safe Australia was who made our rules. I'm not sure if they were as much of an OSHA, because it changed by state from what I understand, but it was our governing body. Right. Anyone else?
And we're going to keep going with this. You see the medicals there. Same questions, all the plants. I wanted to make sure that we had consistency going through the country. So at every plant, we asked the same questions and tried to stay on track with those questions so that everything would be uniform when we came back. Little deviation from plant to plant was expected when we were asking the questions, because everybody had just a little bit different flow chart for how their employees were to work. Looking at the medicals, Daniel's already covered a bunch of this. Drugs, hearing was mandatory, or protection was mandatory, so they were going to check a person's hearing. One of the stories, and I'll let Sid talk about that at the end, about a particular person who came to the gym and actually had a work cover claim with that gym. But eyes, range of motion, underlying conditions. You say, how does this affect safety in the gym? Well, if you don't know it, obviously you're going to probably have a claim somewhere, or an employee's going to get hurt because the employee is not fit to perform the job or duty that he's been assigned to. So they were concerned about that, and would actually run these people through these motions to see if they were fit for work. Orientation, Daniel talked about, they had a three-day orientation, pretty much do's and don'ts, policies and procedures of the corporation. Most of the plants over there were corporate owned. Big plants on the farm, on the cotton, so they could kind of control their employees a little bit better. So when they went through policies and procedures with their employees, they were actually able to spend more time with them than what we do here. They also issued each employee a job description, and I put down there some locations rotated people. I was caught in Airbride. Nobody besides the general and superintendents and the electricians perform the same duty at the plant. You see module feeder, books and bags. You say, what's books and bags? Well, this is actually the person at the press, and Daniel had to educate me on the books. They actually put the sample in a piece of plastic and roll it. That's the book. And, of course, they were responsible for putting the bag on the press. These people would sweeper rotated at Oscott. Why did they rotate? Prevent boredom. Everybody obviously likes to do something different every day instead of the same job, same motion day in, day out. So a little bit of deviation from what we do here in the U.S. I've never seen guys rotate here in the U.S. On their positions, besides probably some of the higher level people, they get to move out a little bit. So again, preventing boredom here. Job specific training, very important to the Australians. Machine operation, hazards, and responsibilities. That was the three that they covered with the employee, along with what Daniel said, air wands, stuff like that, training the employee how to use an air wand. Important because air hose blew off and hit an employee in the eye, he had a claim. Anyway, important, that job-specific training. Lockout. Now, I'm going to stall out here. Lockout's a pet peeve for me here in the U.S. with the trust. It's also a pet peeve for the Australians. We're going to see some pictures on their program and what they were doing over there, but all employees were trained in the story. All employees were trained. The employees I did ask over there, it may be a sweeper, maybe a press hand, whoever I could, hey, what do you know about lockout? They could tell me. They understood lockout. They understood who was going to implement and what their responsibility was for the program. So, very uniform on their lockout programs. Looking at these panels, Daniel showed some pictures of ago just a little bit, but these are lockout panels. They're all through the gym. You got a motor control center in the gym, but these employees had the accessibility to one right at the machine. Something that we don't see here in the U.S., but if you notice, it's got e-stops on it. I understand from Daniel that at Cubby, if a person hit an e-stop at the press, the gym stands out. Because obviously they were having a problem at the press. So that could be a little bit useful. But interesting that all of them were at the machine when we was walking through that. I always heard stories about, hey, you got a lockout at the machine. Yeah, they do. Look down this wall here. These are accessible on a cylinder cleaner up in the overhead. As Daniel said, everything was guarded in the overhead, so we got to go through the overhead of every gym. Another shot here. Now, this one is at a Queensland plant. It's actually at Cubby. Cubby was a Queensland plant before being purchased by the Chinese a few years ago. And you see the keys in the console there. Okay, this is another item in the toolbox that goes along with the lockout program. If you remove a key, it's going to kick that lint cleaner out. It's going to shut it down. It's a part of a fortress system. The idea is for an employee not to be able to open a guard, as Daniel said earlier on the press, not to be open the guard until that machine stops. So you actually was able to shut the machine with that, shut the machine down with that. You also had a lockout on that switch up there. And we'll see another one. Here's one locked out here. Again, accessibility was important to them. The employee not having to walk somewhere to actually shut down and disconnect and then come back and do all the verification. He could actually do the verification right here. A little closer shot here at the fortress system. You can see their keys, as Daniel talked about before. You got to have this key to unlock the guard on that particular machine. And this was pretty uniform in the Queensland plants. Here it is on a press. You just see multiple keys there. One key came out, the press shut down. You couldn't operate the console without that key. if one was missing. So just another tool in the toolbox. Okay, going to change gears right here on this Lummus lint cleaner. Everybody sees the green button there. Their work cover, they have safety coordinators work cover and other people that come into the gyms. If they've had an accident at some point, you're going to see a particular process change on how they're going to get into a guard or stuff like that. This is the result here. The green button was tied into the Lummus technology to where the lint cleaner had to stop before they could open the door on this lint cleaner. Had to stop. So just a little more technology swinging around machinery there to be sure that people could not get into the units. A little closer shot here. It's hard to see that latch, but it just a basic latch with a magnetic switch on it, pretty much where the employee could not open it. Other places through New South Wales, switching gears, we changed states. I did see locks on the side of the guards where people actually had to get a key at that time. So again, just something to keep people from opening guards up. All right. Who has a guard over their gin stand apron here in the U.S.? I had never seen one of these until we walked into this plant. Now, Cubby Station, of course, did have them. Daniel didn't talk about them because they were out of compliance at the time, weren't they, Daniel?
We were modifying.
Yeah.
We had them.
They weren't working the way. They were chasing something like this. But
those were pulled down. Ours were solid aluminum cages that came up. And those were modified to where you could put air ones straight through the stand out without having to pull down.
And that was the idea behind this guard here. So an employee could not come in contact with the picker roller. Or if you look up there with the saw up on top of that feeder. It was, again, an area that somebody had probably gotten hurt in the past, and they came in and said, whoop, hey, we got to change this, so this is where these guards come from. Now, there was some deviation in the guards throughout the country. If you had a Continental machine, you had a little bit different guard, but all the machines were guarded like this for the most part. Here's a plant running with this guard. You can see this guard changes a little bit. It goes a little further up than this guard. There are two separate guards at different plants. And you can see they seem to be running fine with the guard in place. So again, a deterrent to keep employees from getting into the gin stand while it was operating. Looking at this, Daniel talked about this one. This is another shot at Queensland Weewall, where you can see the fortress system on the side of this guard where an employee had to actually go get a key to open the guard. Here at the press, you can see we've got multiple disconnects there in the press area, along with the regular e-stops. You can see the cables there over the bell pusher. So, again, e-stops through the gin so an employee could stop something if something went wrong. Okay, who does a lockout log? Yeah, these guys are doing lockout logs over. And if you got a newer gym where you can go into your consoles, some people use EagleSys over here. They can actually log out and keep up with what went down and went wrong. But this is different. This is a lockout log. They wanted to track which employee was locking stuff out and how they were locking it out. And it was a physical signature to put it back in service. You can see that Ben Gordon here was the guy that almost done it every time on this particular plant. It was funny. This plant, when we were there, was not operating. They finished the season. Me and Sid was walking around, and I noticed Sid said, man, where'd all these locks come from? Every disconnect in that gym was shut down and had a lock on it. Every disconnect. We're talking about 300 locks for this plant. Imagine that. Again, just part of their program. That's what they did. Fall protection, Daniel talked about rail systems, cage, ladders, harnesses. Had really good rail systems in the gyms, along with really good ladders to go up and down. Pretty uniform across the country when we're looking at it. Okay, mobile equipment, going to change gears here. We're going to switch to the state-issued license. You did not operate this thing without a license from the state. You had to go to the state to get your license. The tractor behind it, same thing, and you also had to have one to operate one of these rascals. Those people, you didn't see them move back and forth. You had this person to operate this moon buggy. That guy had a license. He was the only one who could operate it. So it was real clear who these people were. As Daniel said earlier, the vest and everything, general population versus a full-time, just so that you could identify people. Another thing on their training, and I almost forgot to say it, Sid said I need to say it. How many languages we train over here in the U.S.? I mean, you think they train in Australia? One. It's English. Imagine how much simpler life would be if we could train in English. Visiting with Daniel's general manager, there was a specific question that I asked him. I said, so do you get anybody that speaks Spanish, Chinese? A lot of Chinese over there. I said, how do you train those people? He said, we train them one language. I said, really? He said, one language.
Of course, they own the gym.
Yeah, of course, they did own the gym. So it's, yeah. So anyway, I'm going to turn it over to Sid. Sid's going to talk to you a little bit about the work cover and how that worked in the country.
We'll back up just a little how we started. When Daniel, 2014, he worked for me about 6 months, 5 to 4 months, something like that, as an intern. He was an intern for like, what, 7 or 8 years, something like that. I don't know how you were an intern for 7 or 8 years, but he turned out that was the last intern time he had. And he left sometime in October. We had ginned about 85,000, 86,000. He went from there out to Seminole. Went out there and worked, and I think they ginned about 180,000 bales out there. And then he went over another 180,000 bales. But the thing that really caught my eye was he kept sending me photographs on the phone and of those, what they're talking about. And you saw them with these lockouts on each position. And these are all fairly new gin plants. Now, our gin plant, the concrete was poured in 1959. It's been gone from 388s to 128s to 158s to 170s. So we have more than one motor control center. And all of these disconnects at the, once I got those pictures and went to the gin show in Lubbock, and I went to my electricians down in Corpus and got nowhere with them, but went to the Lubbock Electric and talked to Steve Moffitt and kept showing him these pictures, and he finally said he could build them. I don't know whether he'd ever seen one built before, but he did. We put the order in, and what I did after that was we put these disconnects. Now, when you're going to a gin that's already built, it's a little more difficult than what that one was. But what we tried to do is put a disconnect at every piece of machinery that we might be able to shut down while the rest of the gin was working. The gin stands, the feeders, the link cleaners, the fans that took care of them. We still haven't gotten, there's a spot on there that you can hit the, these disconnects, theoretically, you can turn them hot. They do not recommend that. But there's a stop button on there with the wires go all the way back to your control panel. And you're supposed to hit that stop to make sure you're dead. So it was, that's how we got over there. The Texas Cotton Ginners Trust got tired of me calling them and telling them we needed to send somebody over there. So they said, okay, you go with James. And so we went over. Very good trip. Long ways between stops. I told somebody today, one day I'm not even sure which ones we went to, but we were on the road 7.5 hours. And we saw 2 cotton gins in that time. It's just they're privately owned. They gin anywhere from 2.5 to 5 million bales. They have 40 gins. If you average that out, you know, their gins are averaging somewhere in the order to 100 to 120,000 bales a year. In this country, we heard earlier today, 25, 26,000. Nothing wrong with what we have, but there's they came along. I don't know what they had. This is, I think, not the first time they started ginning cotton 25 or 30 years ago, but they are, I told somebody they were fanatical about safety, and I don't mean that to be in a disrespectful way, but they are. They've got it down, and we're not there. I don't think, at least I'm not, but I think it's the first step. Some of it, this fortress system he's talking about, is going to be, I think, really hard to add to some of the stuff we already have, particularly down at the press. But all in all, their attitude towards safety. The other thing is, if some of the gyms we went to, if Jimmy Ropolo here didn't have a lock, what wasn't locked out, and he was working on it, he's fired. Others were a lot more liberal. You got two chances. That second time that they walked up and it wasn't locked out, they would lay them off. I know in Texas, if you tell that story to a lot of people, they'll say, well, what do they do on Saturday night when the crew doesn't show up? And that part's true. But their minimum wage over there, I think, is $18 an hour. That's their Australian money, which turns out to be about 14, something like that. But they their liability laws are different than ours. They don't have the luxury of the workman's comp laws that we have, where when you have an accident, you call your workman's comp carrier, and they're gonna take care of that claim. In Australia, if it's a sweeper, well, they're gonna sue the assistant Jenner, the Jenner, the general superintendent, the manager, the owner. Their liability laws are quite different from ours, and that probably drives some of this. But you don't hear a complaint, or we didn't, from all the way up to the owners. We talked to a couple of owners for a real good long time. You don't hear the complaint that they're bitter about this at all. And so, all of that being said, that moon buggy you saw up there, there were two deaths over there this past year using those moon buggies. So they're not without having some flaws, but I think they got the right idea, and for me personally anyway, we're going to continue. Whether we can, like I said, retrofit in an older plant is, number one, probably more important, because I have three motor control centers. And for your newer plants where you have everything in one, if it's real close to you, that might, but even if I had a brand new plant, I'd put them right there after seeing that. So if any questions from y'all, where's the man from Australia?
Yeah. Thanks for making me clumsy.
Stand up and speak up.
I'd like to hear about the wee rolls and the wee. I'd like to also correct you, we're 41.
41, okay, I'm sorry.
I think what you see in the gyms, I think, really is in our society, it's not gym specific. If you go into a textile home, you see all the things that you have to do. You're ready to commit suicide. It's very, very strict.
Yeah.
As a country. So,
yeah.
I'm happy to hear that. But, you know, you said all positive things. But as you say, we had two gyms last year, and that particular gym where that gym was, had to go through all the work over arrangements to make improvements, and I personally also audit the gyms every year, so I'm also one of the consultants that make sure they...
Yeah. We didn't see a single module truck. I'm sure they have some conventional modules, but in the areas we went, it's all round bales. We can learn. I think everybody knows they've been hauling cotton for long distances for many years. You saw those double trailers. They've got double, triple trailers. And I don't know what size little town y'all may live in, but Moree is not a very big town, about 10,000. And right downtown, you'd see a triple, I don't know how many wheels it had on, 60, I think, or 64. Right downtown, they come and they have a circle, and it's amazing what everything they have, where we were, there was very little rail. And so everything gets handled by truck. We can learn a lot about moving cotton more economically than we're probably doing now. Any questions?
Yeah,
Got a question over there?
Yeah, I want to comment that that outstanding presentation you made to take one of the pictures up there in the bag and
what about what?
What about OSHA?
What is it? I didn't.
OSHA.
Maybe the gentleman from Australia to our church, we didn't see a central.
I don't know. Something about ocean. What about ocean? I didn't hear that. He said they do have a
motorcycle.
Yes, they do.
What about on that rotation? Was that during the just a couple hours during the day, or they moved somebody to sweeping for a whole day? To get them out of, how
they work that? No, daily. At Oscott nearby, they done it every day. The person done a different job. They'd keep the job that for the day, and then they'd rotate the next day. And that Daniel was fixing to say is a little bit different at his plant. I'll let him.
What they have that job's called the rover. So way they gin there. Is what we did at Covey averaging a little bit different. The seasonal guys came in, worked 6 days, and had 2 days off. So for 2 days, someone would come in and work their job.
And they
Now, I wish we had a picture of these seasonal guys, because they weren't seasonal guys. This one gym we went to, there were two young ladies from where? Where were they from?
They're from Ireland.
Huh?
Everybody here, they backpackers, and they were from Ireland.
It's actually hard to get into Australia and go to work, and I think. But anyway, if you're a backpacker and are going to walk up, do a walkabout, well, they and
it's for the visa. They get visa credits at the end of the year if they work in ag for so many months.
I don't know what their credits were, but I vouched for them. They were good-looking girls.
I will say this. Go ahead, Dan. What was your question?
Workers' comp rate. Any idea what the
insurance rates? I didn't hear anybody.
You could go to Queensland Work Cover, bring it up, New South Wales. That's you could find an agent on their site and then proceed to get your workers' comp. I did not research how much it was $100.
But you didn't hear any complaint from the management that this is outrageous. I'm sure.
Yeah, they do have some workers' comp.
Is it insured? To insure them, or is it like our workers' comp? It's a little different. I don't know if they have.
I didn't dwell on that per se. I was staying more on the safety side.
They do have more tort reform than we've got over here. There's a number of us in this room that have had either friends that have lost a limb over there, mm-hmm. or been killed over there. A number of years ago, we had a friend that was killed. Matter of fact, it was killed by his brother. At that particular time, the most liability was about $400,000, which is probably not enough for a death, but that was their loss. So as a company, if you said, what's our total exposure, council today is about $400,000. So, in saying that, yes, you do have to be insured for that. You do have that, but it's not what we have. It's not the exposure you have here today.
And since Scott said that, let me just talk about work cover over there for a little bit. I pulled up the Queensland site, and you want to know where some of this comes from in the country? It comes out of the mine industry. And I guess it trickles down all through the country like I'm sorry I didn't catch your name.
Renee
from Australia was talking about it. It trickles down through the country, so it all comes is real uniform when you look at it in the country. But talking about work cover, everybody's responsible over there. When you look at from the guy who's the sweeper all the way up, through management, through the board of directors, if you have that, they're responsible for it. In Queensland, I was able to get to their page pretty easy and pull up their fine structure. You got three tiers in there, one being least, three being the most severe. And that fine structure holds everybody accountable. I'll just say it like this. A general employee, if he killed somebody or they deemed him to be negligent on a particular accident, possible fine could be $50,000 to that individual. And then they would start and go up to the manager, then the general manager, then hit the board. So they'd go all the way through your corporation. A little bit different from what we do over here. So that drives some of this. They paid attention to safety over.
Did you observe any safety practices associated with overhead seat storage or any kind of non-seat storage that are noteworthy or different from what we're doing here?
Daniel, you want to answer that?
We had a Steve house, literally got into a 2,000 ton house.
They may have had some seat storage, but I never saw an overhead house.
I didn't
either.
But
they blew it right into a house.
Yeah, we stored it and dealt with it there. Nothing overhead.
Harrison?
All right. Let me ask you this. When we shaped the specialist forum, we review all of the accidents. What were you hearing in terms of, were they effective in keeping people out of the rent cleaners and out of the belt?
I think so.
I think so. I didn't hear of any.
The only two accidents we even heard about
were moon buggy.
Was on the moon buggy.
Moon buggy.
And those occurred, as we understand it, he was backing away and the truck driver got out and was fooling around in a place where he wasn't supposed to be.
I
doesn't
get one of them. You said maybe you picked up on this, but I got the idea in the country. Daniel was fixing to talk about how they talked about every accident in Queensland that they became aware of. But I kind of got the sneaking suspicion in New South Wales, the communication across the gens, they didn't like anybody knowing that they had an accident.
So, we had a safety meeting every 2 weeks, and we covered every claim that was through WorkSafe through Queensland, no matter what industry it was. If it was the mining industry, if someone, remember, we got a farmer was on a dirt bike, had a chain wrapped around him, got caught in the tire and pulled him off the building. We had a safety meeting about that. Just kind of open a little bit. To me, they were very open with safety there. We talked about a lot of things. We had a guy have a heart attack during the season. That's when we got a defibrillator and trained everyone in the gym how to use it.
Any more questions?
Oh, but we're going to get one, and he's going to learn how to use it.
What was that, Tommy?
I was just going to ask, what kind of take-home thoughts did y'all have as far as safety procedures that you can bring back here?
I just told you I'm spending a lot of money putting all those disconnects on. No, I'm going to try to put them in place. I don't think we're doing a bad job, but I think when you look and see somebody, how much effort they are putting in it, and whether it's Saturday night or not, or whether we have a communications problem, it can be done much better than I think that I've been doing it. And I don't know, everybody else may be doing a lot better, but I think we can do better.
I feel like that's the biggest thing that we have to overcome is our communication problem. Because obviously, Spanish, we got 2 or 3 dialects going out there. Depending where those people come from in Mexico, and being able to make them understand what we're trying to tell them in the dialect that they do understand can be challenging sometimes, where the Australians don't have that problem. I wish we could train in English. I think until we get that problem solved and make it clear to these people that we're working, what we're trying to get across to them, and it's going to be an uphill battle. If we could train in one language like they do, I think we could solve a lot of problems.
One thing I noticed there, I think it's really important for us to bring back over here, was the convenience, you think? Those disconnect may not be on every motor, but so with any motor that you can stop while it's running, lint cleaners, I love them on lint cleaners. I'll change the salt. I knew whenever I put through a disconnect, I was safe. And it was, here's the lint cleaner, here's the disconnect. It was on
the
side.
Is that the only disconnect for that machine, or is there another on the wall somewhere?
There's a motor control center somewhere else.
Okay, so
yeah.
And from that motor control center, you can put that machine on local or on remote, so you can control from the console, or you can put it on local and you control it right there at the machine.
The other really good-looking feature is reversing. I think somebody mentioned it. If you've got a seed lift, conveyors, they've got reverse. They can reverse those at the site. And my Jim, when they start doing that, he'd be down there doing this, doing that, and by the time we get through, I don't know what we shut off.
Kelly.
If you have a control stop and an actual disconnect that you lock out.
So both just wired back to 480 and back to the control circuit.
Yes.
Are the access guards motion controlled? In other words, in the lint cleaner, the doors won't open, but in the case of like a gym stand, if the gym stand.
On our gym stand guards, we had the Fortress system.
Okay.
You had to pull the key to open them. I will say we took that off because that's stopping. It's just to do a clean up every couple hours. If you want to pull off the bearings or something, look at the side, you have to shut the stand down. So we took it off where we could.
Y'all saw that picture of the press. The press is completed. I don't think I could run my gym with the press completely controlled right there because our strapper requires something quicker than. They've got a lot of good ideas, I think, so it's worth continuing to look at. Particularly if you can get somebody to pay your way over there, that's a good deal.
If you think about this one, for our 6 months of Jenny, our short year, this goes a couple years back, we had one guy have a heart attack, which is more of a natural cause, nothing to do with Jenny. Our biggest injury that we have on file, girl got hit in the eye with an air wand, a couple sprained ankles, and that's our claim for a couple of years.
That's probably
it's worth going through all that covering, but especially whenever you gen to 6, 8, 9 months, that's when you start having problems.
Thank you, James, Sid, and Daniel.